And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Call Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again today. Wow. I'll tell you, yesterday was a very busy day, folks. I was on the air with you all. I was up in Washington, D.C. for an impact luncheon that's sponsored by United in Purpose, UIP, hosted and co-sponsored by Virginia Jenny Thomas. Of course, Virginia Jenny Thomas is the head of Crowdsourcers and a number of other initiatives that she's involved in trying to help save this country. She happens to be the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, but she is a force to be reckoned with in her own right, and God bless her. Congratulations, Jenny, on the third of those luncheons, and I was happy to be there to participate in that. And folks, today is there's a lot to cover today, and we're going to get to every single bit of it. And I've got a guest, a special guest coming on that I want to introduce you to, and it's a follow-up to our shoebox program that we did. And I want to make sure that you're aware of the fact that we don't just do these things and sort of then drop them. That there's follow-through, because after all, ultimately, we know that a physical gift doesn't change anybody's life unless it happens to be accompanied by or opens a door to deeper spiritual truth being deposited into that person's heart, ultimately leading them to a change of life. And so this is ultimately about introducing people to Jesus Christ, ultimately, not just giving them a box full of goodies, right? And so we want to follow up to let you all know how we're working on that. Let me just say that if you want to reach me outside the program, you can go to my Facebook page, E.W. Jackson SR. You can go to my the Instagram page, E.W. Jackson _ SR. By the way, you can email me, too. I am available at email at ewj@standamerica.us. You can reach me there. And I think that, you know, as you all know, Twitter has kicked me off, but we do have another Twitter page that we've set up, Stand Foundation. So you can follow me on Twitter at Stand Foundation. Let's see. There was something else I think I was going to mention to you all that I wanted. Oh, yes. Every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, I host a conference call entitled The Stand Against Communism Coalition. Now, folks, these are leaders from all over the country who come together to talk about how Marxism, socialism, communism is infiltrating our culture and what we can do to stop it. At the awards gala that we held on November the 11th, the keynote speaker, was Lieutenant General retired Jerry Boykin, and he spoke about the rise of Marxism in our country and really got deep into it, talked about this book, The Naked Communist by Cleon Skousen, that explains the agenda that communists have had for our country. And if you compare that agenda, that book was written in 1958, you compare their agenda in 1958 to today, and folks, it'll make your hair stand on end. I'm serious. It really will. You almost think, no, this wasn't written in 1958. This guy wrote this book last week, and he's pretending that he wrote it, 60 years ago, 70 years ago. He's pretending he did that. No, folks, it was really written that long ago, and you read it and you go, oh, Lord, help us, because they have been on what I call a long march toward this sort of Marxist vision for our country, and in many ways, they have implemented it. Now, thank God our government is still free, if you will, and still, depending on who's in office, frankly, but represents the principles and ideals of freedom. But the culture itself has been so wholly and thoroughly infiltrated by this Marxist thinking that the First Amendment is it under threat. The Second Amendment is under threat. Your right to live as a free human being without fear of losing your job, your business, having your reputation smeared and attacked because you hold to traditional biblical Judeo-Christian values, that is under severe pressure today. Severe pressure. Well, you know, this impeachment hearing they've been having, I've called a communist show trial, the equivalent of it. They've started a new set of hearings, and they brought on some scholars, presumably legal scholars. Folks, let me tell you something. As somebody who graduated from Harvard Law School, you know what? Legal scholar doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't mean a thing because at least three of those people, Jonathan Turley was the objective, who is not a Trump supporter, by the way, not a Trump supporter. But he was the objective voice, at least in the group, saying, wait, you don't have grounds for impeachment here. But the other three were singing that same song. And suddenly, as if God just pulled the covers off so that you could see the wickedness and the evil, this one woman who is a law professor was making a point about the president not being a king. Well, like we don't know that. And the way she did it was to do a play on words of his son, Barron Trump's name. The president may have a right to name his son Barron, but he doesn't have a right to make his son a baron. I mean, folks, it just goes to show what I always said. There is no limit to the depths of depravity that people will sink when they don't know God. Now, I did not like Barack Obama's policies. I was about to say I didn't like him, but I never met the man. I don't know whether, you know, in social interaction, I would enjoy talking to him or not, because I don't know anything about him. But I did not like his policies. I never once said anything about his children. I never once said anything about his children, not once. And the only time I ever commented on Michelle Obama was when Michelle Obama would say something that I disagreed with, and I commented on that. But I didn't attack Michelle Obama's looks. I didn't attack her. I just didn't. Folks, it's just wrong. And of course, and she put herself, I think she is completely and totally voluntarily in the public eye with her husband. I don't think she was dragged kicking and screaming into it. I think she facilitated that. And so to some extent, she's made herself a target. But I didn't attack her either, because she wasn't the person sitting in office making policy. She might have been influencing him. But beyond that, folks, I never said a word about Barack Obama's children. God bless them. They didn't choose their parents. They didn't choose to be in the White House. They didn't choose to have parents who are way out on the left. They didn't choose to have people who have the attitude that I think they have about this country, which is one of resentment and hate. Hatred might be too strong a word, but I don't know that it's that too strong a word. I mean, all I saw coming from them against our country or toward our country was resentment and complaints and bitterness. And so I did not care for their policies at all, or their philosophy, or their ideology at all. But I never attacked their children. But you know, she went after Barron, and let me see, find this woman's name. She went after Barron, and they laughed. All the Democrats thought it was just hilarious. Her name is Carlin. It just goes to show how thoroughly, Pamela Carlin is the name, from Stanford, thoroughly corrupt and disgusting and degenerate these folks are. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
The marriage rate in America has been in decline for many years. Consider that in the year 2000, the married 25 to 34-year-olds outnumbered their never-married peers. By 2015, however, those percentages were almost reversed. Young people are not getting married for a variety of reasons. Many economists argue that men are avoiding marriage because they have lower wages and want to increase their income before asking a woman to marry them. But the latest research shows that even where wages have increased dramatically, we see no appreciable change in marriage rates. Another theory is that men are fearful of commitment. Obviously, there's some truth to that, but again, we find surveys that show that men plan to get married but are content to postpone marriage. The median age of marriage for American men is now approaching 30. Sociology professor Mark Regnerus at the University of Texas has published research that explains why men are postponing marriage. It can be summarized in two words: cheap sex. As compared to the past, he says, many women today expect little in return for sex in terms of time, attention, commitment, or fidelity. Men do not feel compelled to supply these goods as they once did. He also adds one other explanation: pornography. Online porn, he says, has made sexual experience more widely and easily available too. A laptop never says no, and for many men, virtual women are now genuine competition for real partners. When many of us were growing up, we sometimes heard our mothers or grandmothers warn young girls about giving themselves away. They ask, why buy a cow when you can get the milk for free? This recent study confirms what they were telling their daughters years ago. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
Take Kirby and the Point of View team with you on the go with the Point of View app. Search for Point of View Radio at the Apple or Google Play stores.
We read books so that we might understand them, but when we read the Bible, we realize that it is describing who we are and what we are.
Pastor Alistair Begg from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
It's also unique in that it provides the only satisfying answer to the question of our human existence. It tells us why we're here and where we're going and why it matters. It answers in a way that is wonderfully helpful those fundamental questions of life that everybody's confronted by. And it's also historical in that the things actually happened. It's rational in that within the framework of Revelation, it makes sense. There is a cohesion to it. It asks us to put it to the test. Taste and see that the Lord is good.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
Brian Fisher here. Nancy Pelosi says the Democrats are going full bore into impeachment. What's going to happen? First, it was Chick-fil-A. Now a Democrat presidential candidate is under fire for working with the Salvation Army. Guess who's chomping at the bit to jump in the race? And an expert witness says it's Congress and not Trump who's doing the abuse of power. Next on Focal Point.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
And we're back. We'll come back to some of these topical discussions in a few moments. But right now, I want to remind you all of something. You know, we did a few weeks ago our Operation Christmas Child, where we encourage you to fill those shoe boxes with items that we would send to children in over 100 countries, many of them completely unreached with the gospel of Jesus Christ. And we wanted to follow up with you and let you know what grows out of that. Because after receiving a shoebox gift through Operation Christmas Child, many of these children then have the opportunity to participate in a follow-up discipleship program called The Greatest Journey. The Greatest Journey. It's a 12-lesson discipleship course, and it's in that child's native language, and it's led by a local teacher trained by Samaritan's Purse, because Samaritan's Purse, of course, is responsible for this great project, and we at AFR are supporting it. And, you know, and look, we all know what discipleship is about, right? Every Christian understands how important it is, and we can relate to it. Some of us had the opportunity to go to Bible classes and vacation Bible school and this sort of thing. This is akin to that, but it's a tremendous discipleship opportunity. It teaches children who Jesus Christ is, what it means to follow him, and how to share that message with others as well. And since 2009, 9 million children have made decisions to follow Jesus Christ as a result of this program. And by the way, a lot of churches have been planted as well. So we wanted to follow up to let you know it's not just sending people a material gift. We actually are trying to follow the commandment of the Great Commission, go into all the world and make disciples, make disciples. And so The Greatest Journey is available to 10,000 more children around the world. That's what we want to do. We want to make it available to 10,000 more children around the world. All it takes is $6 to send a child to The Greatest Journey. So by donating $6, you provide one child everything that child needs to participate in the program. It includes a student booklet, a graduation certificate, a New Testament Bible, stories from the Old Testament. And it all comes, by the way, through local churches that can continue the discipleship process. So that means that there's continuity. So $60 would reach 10 children. $150 would reach 25 children. So you can be a part of evangelizing and discipling and, frankly, multiplying churches around the world through this great program. So call us at 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can donate online at afr.net. Now I've got a special guest who is the Senior Regional Director for the Americas and the Caribbean with Operation Christmas Child. Bill Pfister, he and his wife, Tricia, were missionaries in Argentina, served churches in North and South Carolina. They have three children, one grandchild. They live in Boone, North Carolina. Bill, welcome to The Awakening. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Bishop Jackson. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for your listeners and this wonderful support of Samaritan's Purse and Operation Christmas Child. And you just gave the absolute greatest introduction to what our ministry is all about. And there's still so many children around the world that have not had an opportunity to hear the good news of Jesus, to be discipled in a local church, and so that the gospel would continue to spread. And that's exactly what our heart and our passion is. So thank you so much for what you're doing.
Amen. Well, thank you for what you're doing. And look, I've heard that Operation Christmas Child and The Greatest Journey end up in some pretty difficult places at times. Can you share with us the impact that it's having in some of these hard-to-reach areas where you see families and of children attending and benefiting?
Bishop, I could tell you so many stories about canoe trips and gift boxes going on the back of horses and donkeys and small airplanes and being hand-carried into some of the literally most remote places on planet Earth today. Not to the easy-to-get-to places, but Muslim-majority countries, Hindu-majority countries, where the gospel has not penetrated the way it has in many other places of the world. And the impact that we're seeing are lives being changed, children being discipled, new churches being planted, unreached people groups being reached. Just incredible impact all over the world.
Well, that is really great to hear because, you know, I've often said, I don't think there's anything more satisfying in the Christian walk than to see somebody's life transformed by the power of Jesus Christ. I mean, that always gets to me. I mean, I've seen wonderful things happen. People get blessed and God do great things for people in their lives. But when somebody goes from darkness to light, wow,
yes.
It doesn't get any better than that. Now, look, I understand you recently came back from Mexico where you were working with some unreached people there. And in fact, it even led to the starting of a new church. And there's a pastor leading that work, I understand, who's got quite an interesting story. Tell us about that.
He does, Bishop. Pastor Jose is a very unique man because he, at the age of 2 years old, had polio and lost the use of his legs. This servant of the Lord gets around on a two-wheeled scooter that he pushes with his hands in the mud. And I want to just give a picture for you and for your listeners of the group of people that he's trying to reach. It's not next door. It's not around the corner. It is 5 hours up one of the worst roads I've ever been on in my life. And to a group of people that literally no one has tried to reach for the 500 years since the Spanish conquest, if you will, of Mexico, the Aztec peoples fled into the hardest to reach mountain areas and literally have been untouched for 500 years. This faithful pastor had begun going up into that area, and for 20 years of faithful service, had seen 4 people come to faith in Christ. But when he heard about Operation Christmas Child, we were able to have an outreach event there, invited several hundred children from the community and neighboring communities, and 82 children and 20 adults placed their faith in Jesus Christ. And so that's just a little bit of picture of the impact that we see. Pastor Jose then wanted to go through and do the greatest journey, and so had several teachers with him. They were able to teach the 12-week discipleship classes for these children, and it led to such an explosion of the gospel, just such an impact that they wanted to have church every week. And so just through a beautiful partnership, we're able to dedicate just a few weeks ago a church building among this people group that had previously not had any church, no evangelical presence at all. And so evangelism, discipleship, and it leads to multiplication of new churches and friends telling other friends about how they can know Jesus as well.
Amen. So tell us about how the shoebox, because we encourage our listeners to get involved in the shoebox effort. Tell us how that connects to what you're doing and opens additional doors for evangelism.
Well, I want to thank you first, and you and the almost, you know, for the people here in the United States with almost 9 million shoebox gifts every year. So thank you for what you're doing and your listeners for packing those shoebox gifts. They are reaching these hardest to reach places. And so we have locally trained churches and teachers that know how to put on an outreach event that is child-friendly with a gospel message aimed at the heart of a child. We share the good news of Jesus Christ and explain that this shoebox gift is a tangible expression of God's love for them. But then we point them to the cross and explain how they too might have a relationship with Jesus. And then at that same outreach event, we invite them to come right back to that local church where they can begin these 12 weeks of discipleship lessons through a local church, through a local pastor, so that that person, that family can have a connection to a local church. I heard you say earlier in the introduction, discipleship is about becoming a follower of Christ so that not only just the child, but the entire family can become followers of Jesus. And again, that's what we're seeing happening all over the world. Outreach events for evangelism, discipleship through the greatest journey, and it's just leading to multiplication like a ripple effect in countries all over the world.
And you've got fruit that remains, don't you? Because in some places, you've got folks that have been at this, they were introduced to the class, the Greatest Journey class, and have been with the church and continuing to serve faithfully for 10 years.
Bishop, we recently went back to Quito, Ecuador, to the first church that was a pilot program 10 years ago, and was able to meet there a young boy that was 12 years old 10 years ago, 22 today. And I asked him, what impact did the gospel have on your life? And he said, well, at the outreach event, when I received a shoebox, I placed my faith in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. I went through the discipleship lessons, the greatest journey, learned more about what it means to be a follower of Christ. And he said, the impact that it has had on my life is that I went back home and shared the gospel with my mother, with my father, and with my grandparents. And then he told me, and we're all still connected to this local church to this day, continuing to serve the Lord. So I'm telling you, it's making a difference not only in the lives of children, but of adults and churches and entire communities.
Wow, Bill. You know, Jesus said, we did not choose him. He chose us that we should go and bear fruit and that our fruit should remain. Mm-hmm. So Operation Christmas Child is bearing fruit that remains. And you all are doing the follow-up and the discipleship to make sure that this is just not a one-shot deal. This is an ongoing process of helping people to come to know Christ and then to walk with him. Folks, once again, if you want to donate $6, $60, something in between, call 877-616-2396 or donate online at afr.net. Thank you so much, Bill, for this ministry, man. I'm excited to be a part of it and to help you with it. And God bless you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Bishop, and listeners. God bless you.
Back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
The city slicker had just driven up to the country store. He noticed a group of men sitting on one side of the store's porch, engaged in a game of checkers. On the other side of the porch was a fellow sitting in a rocking chair. The city slicker, who was at the store to make a big sale and turn a nice profit, decided he would go over and speak to the man in the chair. The man, who was enjoying a good chew of tobacco, had an old hound dog lying on the floor beside him. The city slicker, knowing something of the love that country people have for their dogs, decided that the way to impress the man in the chair was to be nice to the man's dog. So he walked over to where the man was sitting. "Howdy, mister," the city slicker said. "Does your dog bite?" he asked. "Nope," replied the man, giving a good strong spit of his chewing tobacco. The city slicker reached down to pat the dog on the head. The dog responded by biting the man's hand off. Finally, when the other men managed to get the dog off the city slicker, he spoke to the man in the chair again. "I thought you said that your dog didn't bite," the city slicker said. The country fellow, still sitting in his chair, gave another healthy tobacco spit and then spoke. "My dog don't bite. That ain't my dog." One of the tragedies of our age is our unwillingness to be helpful when we can. We see people who are headed for trouble, people whom we could be helpful to, and we simply make no effort to assist them. The Italian poet Dante once had this to say about such people: "He who sees a need and waits to be asked for help is as unkind as if he had refused it." Our generation is seemingly being influenced heavily by this policy of non-involvement. We see places where we could help, where our help is needed, and we turn away with the thought that that's none of my business. And that thought, that attitude, is totally false. If you can be of help to your fellow man, and he needs your help, then it's some of your business. We're all part of the family of man, and that makes us all brothers and sisters. Our reason for being in the world is to make a difference, to make it better that we're here. And the finest way we can do that is to lend assistance where and when we can, to have an opportunity to do good. And to fail to take advantage of that opportunity is a reflection of a tragic flaw in our moral character. Non-involvement is a self-defeating attitude, because the time will come for each of us when we ourselves will need the assistance of another. The Apostle Paul once wrote, "Be kind to each other." You know, that's still good, sound advice today. And the carpenter himself said, "Treat others as you would want them to treat you." From experience, let me say that that advice takes precedent over a policy of non-involvement any day of the week. In other words, if it isn't your dog, tell the man so.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
We're back, folks, and thank you all for your support for all that we're trying to do to help those people in our country as well as around the world who don't know Jesus Christ and have never even heard the gospel. Doesn't it do something for you when you hear a story about a town in which nobody has gone in there in 500 years because it's a five-hour trek up, really basically a non-existent road, and you can imagine what that must be like. It just, you know, to have folks who are still out there. I don't believe I'm called to that, but I'll tell you what, I have a lot of respect for the people who are called to be out there in the hinterlands, in the remote areas of the world, going and taking the gospel of Jesus Christ to people and doing all of the grunt work and the leg work and the translating and all the stuff that needs to be done in order to help people come to know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. I tell you, that's exciting stuff, folks. It really is. So thank you all for your support. Let's see. Once again, let me make sure I give you all the information that you need here. In order to participate in the greatest journey, you can call us And here we go, 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. You can donate online at afr.net. Now, you know, once again, folks, there are those times. It doesn't happen every day. It doesn't happen every day. But there are those moments I get up and I start reading the news, and something particularly just, it just makes me incensed. It really does. It makes me incensed. And when I heard about this so-called professor of what? Professor of stupidity, who made a joke out of Barron's name. Folks, I've met people named Barron. What is the big deal? I mean, first of all, leave the children alone. And see, this is what irritates me most about this. What irritates me most is, you know, these are the same folks who are always talking about bullying. Oh, bullying, bullying, bullying. Everybody, you know, you're a bully. I mean, they're always the ones who are pointing out that somebody's a bully. And, you know, when I was growing up, we didn't have all this problem, these problems with bullying. You know why? Because a bully might try to bully somebody, but sooner or later he'd run into somebody, punch him in the nose, and that was that. He'd learned his lesson about bullying. That's the way it worked. Of course, now, you know, my goodness gracious, oh, you're stoking violence. You know, look. Now, folks, I know I'm probably going to date myself. I'm probably going to get in trouble with the left who monitors the program. But you know what my father used to tell me? My father used to say to me, now, son, he said, you're going to find people out there. He always told me, now, you don't bother people. You don't start fights with people. You don't try to take advantage of people. My father always taught me, you try to defend people who seem to be weaker than you are or being taken advantage of. He said, but when you meet those people who think that they can do that for you, he said, and they start talking about all that they're going to do to you and what they're going to make you do, my father would say, while they're talking, you haul off and he hit him just as hard in the mouth as you can. Now, I know, folks. I know. I'm not encouraging anybody to tell your children to do that or anything. I'm just telling you that this was the advice I got. And you know what? It worked. It worked. But at any rate, you know, we want to make everything into a need for psychological counseling and all of that. I guess because of this internet stuff and because of the homosexuality, I say I really believe that a lot of this is stoked by homosexuals because they grew up being picked on because they were, for the boys at least, effeminate or weak or something like that. And that, so this is a cause celeb for them. But when I was growing up, you know, everybody just understood that, you know, the way you deal with a bully is you stand your ground. When he finds out that you're not going to roll over and he's got a fight on his hands, well, guess what? He moves on. And that was just part of growing up. It wasn't any, you know, big thing. We got to get the counselors in and we've got to have people. But, you know, look, and admittedly, life has become a lot more complicated, you know, because now people are using knives and guns and there's so much craziness in the culture today that we didn't. And by the way, folks, that's what we mean when we say we'd like to go back. We don't mean we want to go back to when people were abused or when people were mistreated or when women couldn't vote or when blacks were segregated. That's not what we mean. What we mean is we want to go back to a time when people used common sense and they used just a certain amount of just basic human understanding to deal with problems and resolved issues, and everything wasn't a federal case, if you'll allow me that description. Everything wasn't a mountain. We understood that some things were molehills, and you just kick them out of the way and you keep on pushing. But oh, no, everything's a mountain. We got microaggressions. Ooh, you can't ask somebody where they're from. Oh, that's racist. You can't do that. What? I ask people where they're from all the time. I don't care what these leftists say. Because it's just part of me trying to get to know you, trying to find out who you are. In fact, you know what? When you hear somebody with an accent, I went to a place of business, doesn't matter what it was, and sat down, was talking to someone, and I thought I recognized the accent as an Eastern European accent, but I wasn't absolutely sure. And I said, by the way, where are you from? And she said, Ukraine. Now, you know, you're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to ask that. Ooh. You're not allowed to ask that. That's racist. That's a microaggression. No, it's an attempt to get information. Anyway, I'm going far afield where I wanted to go. But my point, I'm coming back to this point. It sickens me that these leftists will attack children. And folks, they don't have any. You just want to talk about bullying? To me, that's the ultimate bullying. And you know, something rises in me viscerally when people try to take advantage of kids. I'm serious, folks. It's so supremely evil to manipulate and take advantage of and beat up on and bully and kids, attacking kids, because they're not in a position to defend themselves. Of course, the ultimate example of that is abortion. So why should we be surprised? People who think that it's okay to kill an innocent baby in the mother's womb and that it's nothing, it's irrelevant. Are we surprised that they don't have a problem with attacking children? Because they don't respect children. They don't respect life, period. They don't respect themselves. The number here is 888-589-8840. I'd love to get your reaction on that whole situation, because I just think now. And by the way, to be fair to her, she did apologize, and it wasn't an insult to me personally. At least she wasn't directing it at me personally. So it's not that she needs my forgiveness, but I forgive anyway because God has commanded me to. But what I want to deal with is the mindset that allows you to go after a kid, the mindset that allows you to make a kid the target of your attacks. I mean, because see, the apology, I'm convinced the apology is the result of the response that she got from so many quarters. But by the way, you know, the Democrats never called her on it. They didn't mind. They thought that was, the left thought, oh, they thought that was great. You could hear chuckles. In fact, you know what? At some point, I'm going to play that clip for you so you can hear it for yourself. But yeah, you can hear chuckles. You know, no big deal. I think it's a very big deal when you start attacking children. And it's not the first time, is it? It's not the first time the left has gone after the children of President Donald Trump. And by the way, they also go after his wife, Melania. CNN is doing a piece now on this new book that's coming out. And of course, as you can imagine, every negative thing you can conjure up, they've come up with. She's not as transparent as other first ladies. She's not doing it like other first ladies. She's reclusive. Even went so far as to suggest that she and Donald Trump do not sleep in the same bed. Now, you know, folks, this stuff, I mean, to me, it's just beyond the pale. Just beyond the pale. But that's what you get with folks who don't have any respect for absolute morality, for God, for the Bible, for the Word. They're just making it up as they go along. Whatever they do is right as far as they're concerned. Back in a moment.
But this is what I say to dads. Her love and respect for you has not changed. Her need for you has not changed. When she pulls back, it has nothing to do with you and everything about her.
Dr. Meg Meeker on Focus on the Family Minute with an important word for dads.
Because teenage girls feel so awkward. Their self-esteem goes down. They don't know if they're attractive. You know, they feel that everybody in the world sees the pimple on their forehead. And so they pull back from their dads because they don't know how to navigate the relationship. So a healthy response for a dad is, okay, I'm going to continue to pursue my daughter. I'm not going to back out of her life. She can back out of mine, but I'm going to still pursue her and go after her. But I'm going to do it in a different way.
Your teen daughter needs your attention and approval. You'll hear more from Dr. Meg Meeker about different ways to build your daughter up at familyminute.org.
AFR's own J.J. Jasper is a morning on-air personality, author, comedian, Christian, and family man. J.J.'s also a keynote speaker at banquets, men's ministry events, pregnancy center fundraisers, and more. Here's what others are saying.
This is Amy Wishman at Life Choice Ministries in Manhattan, Kansas. Several board members and donors told me that this banquet was our best banquet ever. Thanks to J.J. Jasper.
Information on J.J.'s availability to speak at your event is at jjjasper.com.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Hey, I love that you're saying Merry Christmas, but what's Christmas all about?
Oh, man, it's about presents and family and love and...
Well, yeah, but it's really about Jesus. He came for you. Merry Christmas.
Thanks, man.
Wear and share the AFA Christmas button to remind people about Jesus. He came for you. Visit afastore.net to order in packs of 10. Order before December 12th to make sure you get your buttons before Christmas. That's afastore.net.
Hey, Bart, I know the perfect Christmas gift for a congregation to give to their pastor and his wife.
What's that, Jan?
Sign them up for the AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat.
Oh.
You know how every pastor's family has extra stress because of their position in the church and community? It's like living in a fishbowl.
Yeah, and we've lived through that. The holidays can be especially stressful, so your idea would give the pastor and his wife something to look forward to.
This Christmas, why not give your pastor and his wife a ticket to the Fishbowl Retreat? It'll be March 31st through April 2nd at Pine Cove Camp near Tyler, Texas. We have space for 30 couples, and it'll fill up fast.
You can get more information and register your pastor and his wife at repairingthefoundations.net. That's repairingthefoundations.net. Or you can call 662-844-5036, extension 300.
Merry Christmas from the American Family Association and from the AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
By the way, folks, this attack on Barron Trump is not the first one. Rosie O'Donnell did it. I think there are a couple of others who've done it. But it's just despicable. And we should not be surprised that the Communist News Network is now doing a hit piece on Melania Trump. We should not be surprised that the Communist Show Trial continues to do what communists normally do. You know what they do? They threaten your family. Oh, yeah, folks, that's fairly common. You get in trouble in a totalitarian country taken over by communists. You get in trouble, and guess what? Your whole family's in trouble. Because you get put in jail, your whole family gets put in jail. You get executed, your whole family's likely to be executed because you're all trouble, you see. You're all a problem. And so we should not be surprised that these leftists are following the Marxist playbook. Wipe them all out. Attack them all. Destroy them all. Smear them all. Slander them all. Libel them all. They're all, after all, no good, including the children. I mean, folks, I tell you what. Lord, please deliver us from these wicked people. I'm serious, folks. They need deliverance. By the way, let me mention, and I'm going to come right to the calls, my organization is starting a prayer line, and I'll tell you more about it. And one of the things we're going to be praying about on that prayer line is family and for God to protect and develop the family again in America, make it the central institution of our culture instead of what's happened over the last 60, 70 years, which is a complete denigration of the family. So these leftists have no respect for unborn life. They have no respect for family. They have no respect for marriage. They have no respect for children. So I still don't like it. I'm incensed by it, but we shouldn't be surprised, should we? Okay, folks, we've got full lines. Still have a couple open, though. The number is 888-589-8840. Let's try to get your calls in right away. We've got William in Texas. William, welcome. You're on.
Hey, thank you. And you're doing a great job. Let me get right to the point. This educated idiot that used Barron as an example didn't even use it correctly. The word Barron, B-A-R-O-N, is the lowest title that a royal can be bestowed upon. But Barron Trump's name is B-A-R-R-O-N, and it has two meanings. It's an old English word, and it means either to clear a field by burning it, or it means a young warrior, which is really fitting for the personality of Trump, you know, the champion mentality that he has. And so I just wanted to point that out, that when Barron Trump was named, he wasn't named as someone of royalty. He was named as someone as a fighter, as a winner.
Well, William, thank you for clarifying that. Not to ever expect the left to care about such facts and information, because they are the enemies of facts, information, and truth. They traffic in propaganda. So, but William, thank you for pointing out the distinction, which I'm sure she, as you say, an educated person. Well, now you called her an educated idiot. That's probably more fitting. Has never even thought through when she sat up all night probably trying to think of this little cute quip that she thought was going to make her the darling of all her leftist comrades. Okay, let's go to Raymond in Louisiana. Raymond, you're on. Welcome.
Yes, thank you, Bishop, and I, too, appreciate all you do. But
you.
During the past 3 weeks or so with the impeachment inquiry and all, you know, I was thinking along your lines about the bullying aspect in this whole ordeal. And the members of Congress and the Democratic Party are acting like elementary kids, just bullying, bully, bully, bully. And there's, you know, we've got to pray for new leadership in our government. This is absurd. How they're acting.
Raymond.
But I agree with you. You know, this professor is supposed to be a lawyer, and lawyers should be sensitive for such action, you know, or inaction. They should never belittle a child, name.
Right, taught to use
beyond absurdity.
Right. Raymond, thanks for the call. Lawyers are taught to use our words carefully. We're taught that words have importance and meaning. And for somebody who's supposed to be teaching kids how to think like lawyers, here's the perfect example of someone who expresses herself like she thinks like a fool. And let's face it, these people are not objective arbiters of anything. They are out to get President Trump. They hate him with a passion. They want him gone, and they'll do anything, say anything, tell any lie, and misinterpret anything in order to get that done. I mean, Nancy Pelosi had the nerve to stand up this morning and say, the facts are not in dispute. You're right, they're not. The president's done absolutely nothing that comes anywhere near close to impeachable. And I would argue that he didn't even do anything wrong. I mean, suggesting to a foreign leader that he investigate corruption that's taking place in his country because it happens to touch on somebody who may or may not end up being a presidential candidate or running for president or being the nominee is irrelevant. If there's corruption going on in his country and we're giving these people money, it seems to me the president of the United States has a perfect right to say, find out what's going on, because you don't want to be giving the hard-earned taxpayer dollars of the American people to people who are stealing it, and you certainly don't want Americans coming over there stealing the money of their fellow citizens and enriching themselves on the basis of their political connections. I mean, so as far as I'm concerned, the president did absolutely nothing wrong, certainly nothing impeachable. All right, let's go to Kevin in Arkansas. Kevin, welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. It's amazing about this professor. You think she's been teaching kids, you know, young adults, and she's probably one of these that torment them by downgrading whenever they disagree with her, you know. But, you know, I was growing, whenever I grew up, I'm 63 now, and there are certain things that are, it doesn't matter what race you are, it's what morality you are, and that's what I always liked about Martin Luther King. I'm a white male, But I loved some of his comments. Mine was the favorite was, you know, I long for the day whenever a man's not known by the color of his skin, but by the conduct of his character.
Amen.
But yet today we see always interjected. They don't get the message. You know, they don't, whenever I was growing up, I was from a family of eight, and I was a fourth down the line, and I was the family protector. You know, if anybody messed with my brothers or sisters, now I was there. You know, I protected the weak. And even growing up in school, whenever I saw a bully trying to bully somebody of my classmates, those are my friends, the weak, you know, and I always found myself, siding with the weak, you know, to protect, you know, it was just inbred in me. You know, that's the way I was raised, morally. And, but amen. The left, you know, they have no regard for the Constitution. They say they do, but everything they do is to undermine it.
No regard for the Constitution, Kevin. No regard for basic morality. The only thing they have regard for is whatever ideas they make up, which they then try to force others to bow to. And you're absolutely right, Kevin. I mean, think about this. They now need safe spaces and crying rooms. And when we were growing up, you know, we worked this stuff out. We toughed it out. We fought it out. And look, one of my best friends became a guy who I ended up having a couple of fights with, but by the time it was over, we had respect for each other. I mean, we were fairly young kids, but we worked this stuff out. We didn't need crying rooms, and we didn't need safe spaces, and we didn't need therapists to get in the middle and say, oh, well, you know, now this may be a situation where you don't quite know who you are. I mean, it was, oh my goodness. I tell you, the left has really done a horrible job on our country, and I'm believing God that we're going to get it back to those fundamental values that made America the greatest nation on earth. Let's go to Don in Florida. Don, welcome.
Hi, first off, thank you for your show. A little bit.
Thank you, Don.
Some of the things, like, for example, we all remember when Rosie O'Donnell first started attacking Trump when Trump got into office. I mean, he did absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. I was on Twitter this morning, and I happened to be looking at one of the trending tweets where they're basically mocking Melania's Be Best thing. And there were some cruel things that they were saying. And one of the things that they were saying was a lot of them were kind of saying, well, the idea is how dare a fake outrage or something like that. Because how dare we say anything about Barron, okay, but it was okay for Trump to say something about Greta Thunberg. Well, the difference about Greta was she chose to be in the public eye.
Right.
Barron, it came with the territory. And the other thing I want to throw out there is we can blame our churches, we can blame our schools, we can blame anybody else, but the truth of the matter is this really has to start at home because, you know, dogs and children and all of it. I mean, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of adults that need to be disciplined. So we can only expect that their kids are going to be worse. It's kind of like their dogs, you know. Their dogs aren't the one that needs to be on the leash. It's them.
Okay. All right. Well, Don, thank you. I'm going to try to get one more call in here before we have to go. Let's go to Earl in Texas. Earl, welcome. You're on. You've only got about 30 seconds, Earl, but see if you can get it out there.
Okay, thank you, Bishop, for taking my call. I just happen to be an American of African descent, and I agree with all that you're saying. I appreciate you, or we appreciate you out here. And,
you know,
I'm just outraged because of those professors and the lies that they were telling to try to say that if the president was impeachable or he committed an impeachable defense or offense. And It just sickens me that the Democrats are getting away with so much.
That's it, Earl. I've got to go, but thank you. You ended on a great note. I agree with you. But you know what? We the people aren't going to let them get away with it because we cannot be defeated if we will not quit because we are on God's side.